All right, and welcome everyone. I'm Stephen Roberts. This is a very special Cancel the Cabal on People's Internet Radio. I don't even normally do a show on Tuesday night, but I messed up last night. Totally forgot and went off and helped someone and forgot about Monday night being my show night. And that's somebody else. I could have had someone else help out, but I don't know. I chose to do it myself, but I'm on the air tonight. My last night's guest is on here tonight. I was supposed to bring up Greg Ford, and totally lost my marbles and forgot all about it and did something else. But I want to welcome Greg back to the show. So welcome to tonight's special show, Greg.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, if you want to do this a Good Samaritan thing tonight, for Good Samaritan or whatever it is you do up there in Michigan, hey, that's great, Steve. I'm sure everybody forgives you, okay, because you were helping some poor soul.
So, I hope so.
So anyway, no, hey, it's always good to be, to be on your show. And, again, we have just spoken about having people call in and so forth. And I really look forward to, people calling in because, that's such a great feedback. And I look forward to it, but I can actually say that, of all these dramatically impressive issues that have come up since I've been on your show, that, yes, I've only been wrong once, and I apologized to your listeners for that, and that's when I said that the General Janusz Karpinski of Abu Ghraib infamy was actually, announcing her innocence because I'd worked for her there in Iraq, and of course it turned out that after a debriefing from Delta Force that she was thoroughly guilty and thoroughly in the wrong about the abuse that was meted out and to those detainees and prisoners at Abu Ghraib. So, and I apologize, but that was the only time, as far as I can tell, that I've been wrong with you, Steve. And so I'm really wound up tonight, and I'm looking forward to getting some stuff out there. Especially the stuff that's happening now. Every time I warn your listeners about something, our government and Obama, President Obama, and all these other jokers, they oblige by being exactly what I say they are, okay? And they do exactly what I say they're going to do on your show. And so the biggest thing that's happened in the last few hours, I think everybody's read about it now, is something like this, we have now announced before I get into that, Frontline, okay? Did everybody watch Frontline? If you did, call in. Let me know what you thought of the Frontline on the Ed Snowden expose. And it was called The United States of Secrets.
I watched the first 2 hours of it, Greg.
Yeah, what did you think, Steve, after you got over the first initial shock of thinking that it was propaganda, for the administration?
Well, to tell you the truth, I thought it was just more and more and more of the same, but they just kind of sugarcoated it. They didn't really get into Snowden much at all, from what I've seen. I don't know, it just seemed to go on and on and on about terrorism, terrorists, and we didn't know nothing, and I know nothing, I see nothing. The Sergeant Schultz. I know nothing. I see nothing.
Yeah. Well, the part I liked, about that is that it showed the people that sounded the alarm about eavesdropping on Americans' phones, and Americans' communications, and how the administration, George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Michael Hayden, General Hayden, all decided that they were going to remove all the safeguards against all our basic men rights, human rights, human rights protections, and they did it. Okay, and then they turned right around, as they show on the show. Okay, Frontline. They turned right around and utilized the FBI as a Gestapo Waffen SS type law enforcement agency. All right, to punish those people that stood up and tried to fight for the American people's rights to have privacy and not have a runaway government, all right? And also it came out that, in spite of doing all these travesties, and these are felonies, okay, I don't care what anybody says. You know, there's no doubt George W. Bush, Richard Cheney, all right, Michael Hayden should all be in. Oh, and don't, let's not forget Alberto Gonzalez, all right? They should all be doing time at the Club Fed in Lompoc, California, all right? They should be all making license plates and building furniture for offices, federal offices, okay? That's what they should be doing, all right? They should not be, you know, learning how to paint by numbers and all this other, you know, nonsense that they're doing now. Forget it. Now, after seeing that and watching the sanctimonious Alberto González, Gonzo, okay, as he's known to W, and Dick Cheney, he's known as Gonzo, okay? Well, that's exactly what he introduced. After watching that show, it became apparent. He introduced the Gonzo judiciary, okay? He actually staged a coup where he went into the hospital room of John Ashcroft, the attorney general, and actually forged his name onto the executive order.
Did he?
Yes.
Wow.
You know, and that all came out in the show. Okay. I knew about it. Everybody in the intelligence field was talking about it. But yes, he did. They walked in Andrew Card and a bunch of other dubious sorts. And of course, now they're all crying innocent. But yet they went into the hospital room where John Ashcroft was suffering from pancreatitis. And they proceeded to hold his hand, put a pen in his hand. He wasn't able to. And then hold his hand and then scrawl his signature, okay, onto it, on this document, allowing Alberto González to take over the position of Attorney General, okay. Don't they call that a coup, like a banana republic coup or something along those lines?
Something like that, and yeah.
Right. Well, and then to have that little twerp sit there and look at the camera, which he did, and say that the job of the Attorney General's office is to prosecute people who do crimes. All right? Prosecute people who do crimes. So in other words, that they were going to prosecute, say, Dick Cheney, okay, or like for shooting his friend in the face, for one, for two, starting a couple of phony baloney wars, endless wars, for number two, number three, exposing Valerie Plame and the CIA connections, he and Carl Rove, excuse me, Turd Blossom, okay, that's Carl's pet name, by the way, Turd Blossom. Would you trust anybody in government with a nickname of Turd Blossom?
Well, I wouldn't trust anybody in government.
I have a hard time with that one.
I wouldn't trust anybody in government to begin with, though, Greg.
Well, yeah, you're right. And after watching the front line, by the way, part two is coming on sometime this week, all right? So everybody should look for it. I really hope they do.
It's not on Tuesday? Or it wasn't on tonight?
No, that was number one.
Oh, okay.
Again, they repeated it, all right? So, and remember, just about this time, Alberto González, Gonzo, a.k.a. Gonzo, okay, we've got a.k.a. Turd Blossom, Carl Rove, and a.k.a. Gonzo, okay, and he was the moron, the imbecile, that had the nerve to say that the Constitution was just a quaint, antiquated piece of paper that had no relevance to today's, you know, system of law and justice. Okay, right there. You know, I mean, this guy's supposed to be an educated, trained lawyer in the highest law enforcement position in the land, and he says something like this, okay? Why wasn't he removed on the spot? That's what I'd like to know. You know, obviously my blood pressure shot up after watching this show on Frontline. The whole thing, all right, and that we're dealing with, America is dealing with, 6 years later, we're dealing with this, started, you know, at the behest and at the control of George W. Bush. And is there any sign that they're going to repeal any of these privacy invading monitoring practices of monitoring everybody's communication systems? Oh no, they're doing just the soft shoe shuffle is what they're doing. There's no indication that they're going to back down whatsoever.
Say, Greg.
This will let you know who's in charge here, by the way.
Hey, Greg.
All right. Yes.
Is that what they call the Potomac Two-Step?
Yes, you got that right. The Potomac Two-Step, right. Actually, I thought that was a diarrhea condition, but that's good enough for me. All right. So I said that the way these things work is when the heat gets to be too much in the kitchen, okay, that they're gonna throw out some red herring, you know, spectacular operation, and they just did today. All right. You know, trying to put the heat somewhere else, trying to justify their bad behavior, okay, criminal behavior. Let's call it what it is, criminal behavior. And so what did our government do now today? They have announced that they're going to prosecute 5 members of Chinese intelligence for doing exactly the same thing that NSA did, except NSA got caught by the, you know, the ever brave Ed Snowden, all right, the courageous Ed Snowden, all right? He was the one who said, oh, yeah, right, sanctimonious government officials are not only eavesdropping on all our communications, but they're doing it for several reasons, and they're doing it for on everybody else. And, of course, we've been saying, oh, yeah, those bad old Chinese, you know, but they have some great names, you know, that group of 5. You know, as I said earlier, Steve, I want to get the nickname Wang Dong, okay? That is the name of one of them, okay? Wang Dong, all right?
I almost thought you
were the ugly gorilla. Okay.
Say, you know what, Greg? When you first said that there a little while ago, I thought you was talking about an 80s pop band. They called themselves Wang Chung.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought it was a reference to a Chinese porn star myself.
Oh, okay.
But
you mean Hung Wei Lo?
Wang Chung, right. You're right. Okay.
Have you ever heard that Chinese porn star?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, well, his name is Hung Wei Lo.
Oh.
I know, that was a cheesy joke, wasn't it?
Yeah, but you know, this is about as much seriousness as this whole ridiculous accusation by, oh gosh, that fountain of integrity, that monument to integrity, Eric Holder, Mr. Fast, was Eric Fast and Furious Holder, okay, walking up and making the grand announcement at the National Press Club that they were going to prosecute these people. Oh, yeah, I'm sure they're just shaking in Chinese intelligence right now. They're shaking in their rice bowls. I really think they're doing it. You know, the fact that these jokers here are accusing them of electronic espionage. All right. Oh my gosh. Okay. Pot calling the kettle black. All right. Oh, this really hurts. And so they did that today. And all I can say is, yeah, good luck. By the end of this week, this thing will be history. All right. Chinese history. What a ridiculous thing to do is you get caught in something, so you blame everybody. You know, that's a typical operation, you know, a holdover kind of thing from the Bush regime. But I did find out, by the way, why our government is so determined and why Obama is so determined, our presidential Manchurian candidate. Okay. Everybody kind of cringes when I call him that, but yes, that's what he is. There's no question about it. You know, he was speaking as somebody told me tonight, speaking of espionage, have you seen him remove any of the Israeli influence of intelligence?
No, I haven't.
From the American government?
No, I haven't.
I haven't. AIPAC is as strong and not stronger than it ever has been. All right. I was informed by good sources, and I'll challenge anybody to try to deny it, that virtually every single politician that we have in America has at least one associate Mossad operative on board. All right. That means that virtually every single politician has somebody on their staff reporting, okay, to the Knesset or Tel Aviv, all right, where, of course, actually, I think the Mossad is headquartered in Haifa, all right, but yes, gosh, so has Barry, I think that thing, I can never figure out what his name is, because I can't even figure out where he was born, okay.
Barry Satoru?
Yeah, exactly, Barry Satello, all right, where he came from. I can't figure it out, right? I'm still at a loss.
But Greg,
you know,
you need to either rent the movie or buy it or something, or get it offline or something. But there's a movie called Dreams from My Real Father. It's actually a documentary that goes into some of the best evidence out there. And that evidence shows that Barry, a.k.a. Barack, in many opinions, is the offspring of a 40s, 50s, and 60s Chicago communist named Frank Marshall Davis. Yeah, there's a lot of good correlations between the Dunham family and Frank Marshall Davis in the late 50s, early 60s over in Hawaii. And Barack H. Obama Sr. was nothing but a patsy, and he was bought off for his name.
Well, I think you're onto something, because that's pretty close to what I read in The Manufacturing of a President, okay, by Wayne Madsen.
Right.
All right. And Wayne actually went to Indonesia and investigated, instead of just talking about, everybody else talks about things, but Wayne actually does things. Like when he and I went up and investigated the Phil Marshall massacre of the family, okay? And which is not, of course, the movie that just came out last week. You know, unthinkable. Yes, now I know, when you said that, now it dawned on me what I'm going to say next. Yes, now I know where he gets this socialist streak, okay? This manufactured president that we have, manufactured Manchurian candidate, is something like this. He is going on July 1st, he is going to be implementing a monetary control program. All right. Yeah, all those government programs, you know, you gotta watch them. The ones that sound the most innocuous and ineffective are usually the most dangerous. All right. Well, guess what? Okay. You know, like I say, I wasn't quite sure why Obama was pushing for all this illegal wiretapping and monitoring of the American people. Okay. The American people. All right. Everybody gets wiretapped. Okay. He's a non-discriminatory eavesdropper. Okay. He orders everybody to be wiretapped. Okay. So. That's what he is doing, is he wants to find out what it would take, first of all, to hide the $7 trillion that disappeared, okay, and I told your listeners where it went, all right, that's $7 trillion, because now there's the rumbles of actually an investigation, okay, it won't go anywhere, like everything else in government, as soon as they bring in the FBI, things just kind of disappear, you know, I mean, and that started, by the way, that phenomenon started, the FBI used to be a pretty sharp organization, aside from cross-dressing, it used to be a pretty effective group, okay. And that started with, you know, they started to get really flaky and the clutch started to slip. When LBJ, okay, Lyndon Baines Johnson, remember him, okay, the original organized crime syndicate operator, the vice president, he became the vice president of the United States, a real 10-gallon hat wearing Texan, all right, well, yes, LBJ was under four separate investigations by the Department of Justice and the FBI, and they pretty much had him to rights until something happened, all right? Something unusual happened, and he became, it was an assassination.
Yeah.
And LBJ all of a sudden became the president of the United States.
He did. Bobby Kennedy was the AG, wasn't he?
Excuse me. Yes, he was. Yes. And actually, by all accounts, a very good one. On all accounts, a very good one. I was just a kid when Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. But I had gone, my father was a teacher. Excuse me. And I'd gone, my father had to go in and do some late night work. He taught drafting and architectural, drafting. And so he was working late, and he, taken in to watch the election results and the announcements of nomination. They'd taken in a little black and white TV set, a little hand portable one. And I remember sitting there watching it and next to my dad, and they just nominated, what was it, the Ambassador Hotel? I think it was called the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. And they just made the announcement that he was nominated, and he was moving. The camera was following him going into the kitchen. And I was watching, and I heard the scream first. And there was a scream of a woman. And then and both my dad and I looked at the TV, and you know, both of us were shocked. I mean, for a child to be shocked, it takes quite a bit. And we were both shocked and horrified. And I've never seen my dad look so gray, okay, as he looked when Robert Kennedy was assassinated. And now it turns out, yes, he was. And he wasn't assassinated by Sirhan Sirhan. Okay. I had the impression almost immediately that, you know, one of those bad old Arabs had assassinated Robert Kennedy. But no, he wasn't. Okay. And it's very clear now he wasn't. And yes, you know, Sirhan was another patsy. It seems to be the requirement of any decent assassination is that they have some sort of patsy already set up. But anyway, as a result though, as I started to say, when John F. Kennedy was assassinated, that all those FBI investigations into LBJ, they just disappeared overnight. All right. They just disappeared. So that's when all this stuff about political position just kind of disappeared. There was like Dick Cheney, all right. Everybody thinks he's just such a cut up kind of guy. All right. Just a great guy. Well, funny thing was that transportation taxes that Halliburton had been screwing the state of Wyoming out of all these years, and there's no doubt it was happening. All right, moving between the Castor oil fields and the Cheyenne refinery. Okay, check it out. Okay, but as soon as he became vice president, he was senator then, and they really couldn't touch him. But then he became vice president, and the whole thing just disappeared. So
yes,
that's
it
what
did.
It seems to be is that you can be a criminal. You just, in this country, you just have to be a politician and a criminal.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's what it seems to be. I mean, out in California, we've got senators that are gun running, getting caught red-handed gun running. Okay. And they're turning into celebrities. They're never going to see a day in prison. Okay. You know, at the club fed. And so.
That's the way it seems to be, doesn't it?
I'm sorry?
I said, that's the way it seems to be, doesn't it?
Yes. And so with Obama's cash control program that he's going to initiate July 1st, guess how he's going to monitor the effects of it, people? He is going to listen to your phone calls. When you find out that all your retirement programs are fast being dismantled and pulled apart because Obama feels that the government should control things like retirement and your wages and your savings, all right? That is exactly what he is going to do, and he is using your communications. Everybody, you know, everybody in America is using your communications, and he's also using the target countries, using their communications to monitor what his financial controls and the effects of those are going to be. That's what he is doing. As they say, you want to find out about all this intrigue? Just follow the money. Any situation, follow the money. All right? That's exactly why he's monitoring all these countries and paying out of my tax dollars, your tax dollars, all your listeners' tax dollars, paying the government to go along with us to allow monitoring of their own citizens. So these cash control programs can be implemented, okay, with the least amount of agony and then the most effective method possible. He's raising intelligence for that right there. Okay, that's it. That's why he's doing this. He's not trying to hunt down Al-Qaeda. OMG. He's trying to hunt down the bad old Q. I doubt it. Okay. Given the fact that all the eavesdropping has not stopped one single attack. And since it was implemented by George W. Bush and strengthened by Obama, it has not stopped one single attack, okay? So everybody should be asking themselves, well, why have they not stopped the program, okay? Why haven't they restored the protection of privacy to all the citizens that pay for these programs and pay the salary of Barry Sotelo, Barack Obama? Okay, why haven't they done that, all right? It's because They want to monitor much bigger effects of bigger programs. That's what is going on, folks. You know, the $7 trillion, that was your money. Guess what? That's toast, okay? You know, all of Barry's banker, I'm sorry, Barack Obama's banker buddies, okay? He is a firm supporter of Goldman Sachs, by the way, okay? I mean, you look at his economic staff, guess who, okay? At Goldman Sachs. And, okay, and then, you know, we have a situation, okay? You know, like I say, I'm just a plain old guy myself, so everybody else can see what I see. But I know how these dirtbags actually behave, and I've kind of got them down now, okay? After being in the intelligence business for three decades, I kind of know, all right? Well, the next one that was pointed out to me today was somebody named Carl, a.k.a. Turd Blossom Rowe, all right? Carl Turd Blossom Rowe.
Turd Blossom Rowe.
Right, Turd Blossom, okay. Now, you know, that was W's pet name for Roe, okay. You know, he's been called the Golden Boy, the savior of the Republican Party, okay. Now, I'd like to know if there's anybody out there, within the sound of this voice of this show, Steve, that has looked at Karl Rove and said, there's a psychotic, all right? He's a sociopathic psychotic, okay? You know, we all went to high school, and we all had kids like Karl Rove that, you know, they were all kind of weaselly looking, and everybody kind of ignored them. Well, this is what happens with those kids when they grow up.
It is. It is. Those are all the ones that get picked on, Greg.
Yeah,
they all go into politics.
So they're going to show everybody, so they get into something where there's control over
other
people.
That's right. Either the TSA or police. Or into politics, one or the other, right?
You got it. And guess what he did? The Golden Boy who saved the Republicans. You know, I'd be embarrassed if I were the Republican to say, you know, to say that sociopath actually had to save, you know, my political endeavors. All right. And gosh, did you know that Karl Rove has been under investigation? To show you how ineffective the FBI has gotten to be. He's been under investigation continually by the FBI since he was 21 years old. Okay. And he was so vicious. Okay. When he was working for George H.W. Bush, that George H.W. Bush, I mean, this is how vicious he was. I mean, the former head of the CIA, okay, the man that's implicated in the Kennedy assassination, all right, gosh, I mean, that has been responsible, as I found out the hard way, sitting in a bunker in Iraq, been responsible for selling nerve gas to Saddam Hussein, weapons of mass destruction, that George H.W. Bush said that Karl Rove was too mean-spirited and vicious to work for him on his, you know, on,
wow.
his committee.
That's amazing.
So yeah, it's great, you know, the kinder, gentler George H.W. Bush, okay? Remember that term, kinder and gentler, okay? Well, surprise. Well, guess who the sociopath goes to work for next? George W. Bush, okay? Gosh, W. I mean, he must have seen something. You know, like the original handler and trainer that saw Seabiscuit, okay, and said, there's a damaged horse, but he can do great things, okay? Well, that's probably the miraculous insight that George W. Bush, you know, utilized it. When he looked at Carl Turd Blossom Rowe, that's probably what he said, all right? I remember myself, I saw this picture, maybe a lot of your listeners did, of seeing Carl Rowe with a set of plastic ears on, mimicking a Ross Perot, okay? And I thought, and of course, you know, it's just bad taste, okay, to make fun of somebody's physical abnormalities, okay? It's just khaki, trailer park, white trash, bad taste, okay? For lack of a better description of it, a better adjective. That's it, okay? But there he was, and of course, W thought it was just hysterical, all right, that they were making fun of Ross Perot, fellow Texan, of course, right? And so I thought, okay, obviously, this guy knows how to make people, you know, respond and put them in a certain light to where they don't want to be the target of Mr. Rowe. And I am correct, all right? Nobody wants to be targeted by Mr. Roe. And to show you, you know, some of his past targets, for example, Valerie Plame, okay? Remember the hoopla over Plamegate and Valerie Plame? Who exposed Valerie Plame as a CIA agent, okay? Who exposed Brewster Jennings? The intelligence network that she had set up.
Right.
Well, approximately 1,200 intelligence agents, okay, while she was looking for weapons of mass destruction. Oh, gosh, can we see a convergence here? The weapons of mass destruction that I ran into in the bunker in Iraq, those were shipped over the border, you know, from Turkey. Oh, gosh, there's her connection. She was in Turkey tracking those weapons. And guess who exposes her, okay? It was, everybody says, oh, no, it was Scooter Leibowitz. I'm sorry, did I stutter and say Leibowitz? Okay, I'm sorry.
You meant to say Libby, really, right?
Scooter Libby.
Scooter Libby, yeah.
All right, okay. That's a Mossad thing, okay? All right, everybody in Washington knew he was Mossad for like 20 years, okay? Scooter Libby, a.k.a. Leibowitz, all right? A.k.a., you know, our friendly Mossad representative, all right? Well, everybody knew that it was Karl Rove, you know, working with, oh gosh, Richard Cheney. Okay. Another fountain of integrity. Richard Cheney. Yeah. Please, if there's anybody out there listening, call me, call in and say, why aren't these people in the club fed? All right. Grabbing their ankles and paying their rent. Grabbing their ankles in the shower and paying their rent. All right. Why aren't they making, you know, furniture for federal offices made by, you know, where they stamped on the bottom, made by killers that care, okay? You know, why aren't they doing that? I would really like to know, if anybody knows in the audience, okay, you know, they should call in and let me know, because I'm mystified, okay? I mean, these people, like I say, Karl Rove, you know, actually exposed a fellow intelligence agent, Valerie Plame, who was doing what she was supposed to be doing. Surprise. I do what I'm supposed to be doing. Okay. I find weapons of mass destruction. Not a word. I report it to my commanding officer, and surprise, the commanding officers, starting from Colonel Pappas, the infamous Colonel Pappas, all the way down to Victor Artiga, okay, the infamous Major Victor Artiga, okay, they all got plush. Luxurious jobs working for, oh gosh, the Carlyle Group. Okay. Does anybody know who started the Carlyle Group? George H.W. Bush.
That'd be Pappy Bush, wouldn't it?
Convergence here.
That was Pappy Bush, wasn't it? Yeah. 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 That seems to be amazing. You know, all seems to lead back to Pappy Bush a lot of the times.
You got it. Okay. The great Bush document purge. Okay, well, sorry, document folks, but you missed all those documents of the Carlyle Group there in the bunker. When I was sweating, it was 128 degrees in that bunker, and I was pulling off the bills of lading. You missed those documents. You got all the other ones, but you missed those documents. All right? So, yes, there it was in clear black and white, the Carlyle Group. You know, the irony of that, Steve, is that as soon as that information came out, there was all these, you know, all these experts from the Carlyle Group,
right?
Who all said, you know, we demand a retraction. That, you know, it wasn't really those bills of lading that said Carlyle Group that you found. Well, surprise, they have all kind of like drifted away. Okay, you know, when I refused to, you know, budge one inch on that, oh my goodness. Then they said, okay, we want a retraction, or you're going to see some legal action. Oh, yeah, right, legal action, okay, because, surprise, they don't know where all that documentation went. So I think it's time that a court case like mine with those documents should be produced showing the Carlyle Group, okay, and the bills of lading. I think it's about time. And that takes me to the next grandiose effort of the ever ambulant Karl Turd Blossom, okay, was when he got Dan Rather fired. Okay, remember Dan Rather?
Certainly.
Right. Yeah. And Dan Rather was investigating whether George W. Bush was AWOL, Okay.
Right.
By the way, that was a sniffing sound of cocaine.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, you know, that was why George W. Bush couldn't land his plane, his training plane, you know, where was it? In the Texas National Guard.
He had too much white stuff in his eyes?
Yeah, that was the sound that the tower heard every time they tried to call him to talk him down. He tried seven times. They kept hearing this. Okay. And they knew something was desperately wrong. Okay. With pilot, George W. Bush. Okay. And they finally, they had crash trucks and hold that up because they couldn't get him down on the ground. All right. Very dangerous situation. So when they finally got him down and he skids to a stop, pops the canopy, gets out and walks off. And was never seen again on the hallowed halls of the Texas Air National Guard. Okay, well, that's a pretty obvious thing to check. Pretty easy to check. Well, Dan Rather did that. Nobody ever said that he wasn't exactly correct in his investigation. No, this has Karl Rove's fingerprints all over it. That the initial evaluation was, what was it, written in ballpoint pen or some damn thing, okay? And at the time, it was supposed to have been typed. That's right. It was supposedly typed on a word processor instead of a typewriter. That's right. That's what it was. And it had Karl Rove, okay, you know, George W. Bush's evaluations and so forth, and all the make-believe drills that he participated in, you know, with the Texas Air National Guard, which, of course, the only way he could have gotten in the first place was if dear old dad had pulled some tremendous strength to get him in there. So needless to say, the greatest pilot, the greatest pilot that the Texas Air National Guard ever produced, okay, that's what a bunch of these blowhard colonels, you know, were busy saying about George W. Bush. Well, I guess this must have been the same guy that supposedly landed his spider on the deck of a aircraft carrier and gets out with a cod piece in his flight suit, wearing a cod piece, walks across the deck and says, mission accomplished. Okay. Must have been the same guy. Okay. I think that was the same guy, right, Steve?
I think it was.
Yeah. Okay.
Unless they had a clone or something.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, so, you know, we've got George W. Bush, okay, busy, you know, okay, disappearing from the Texas Air National Guard, okay, and then he somehow manages to get his brother to pull hanging chads, you know, in the election, okay, of Florida, you know, hanging chads. God, you know, I mean, we don't have anything. You know, the Chinese don't have anything on us. Okay. You know, they have, what was that guy's name? Sweet Candy, you know, the name of one of the agents, an ugly gorilla and so forth. Well, hey, we've got hanging chad elections. All right. And the Supreme Court actually said that was okay. They made the decision that said that somebody that was elected on hanging chads could be the president of the United States. Okay. Well, yeah, that was effectively the day, you know, the presidency died of the United States. The legitimacy of it died that day. And then, of course, you know, Ohio, 4 years later, that was a very good example. But anyway, I found out something. Okay. And in the intelligence business, I think your listeners know by now how I feel about coincidences, okay? There are no coincidences.
They don't happen, okay? Do they?
In the intelligence field, there are none, okay? They just don't exist, all right? No matter what you might think, no matter how you want them to look or appear, there are no coincidences, okay? Well, 9/11. Okay, everybody's heard about my briefing, our briefing as intelligence agents with Anthony Schaefer, okay? The irony, by the way, last week, I don't know if I told your listeners this, is, surprise, my law firm received a typed letterhead. Did I tell you this, Steve? It was a letterhead.
Yes, they did. Yes, you did. Yes.
Okay, yes. Attacking me in every which way it could. Basically, every single, you know, college degree that I've received, every bit of training over 30 years, it attacked it, okay? It attacked me. And it was anonymous. It wasn't signed, okay. But I have now contacted the Fox News network, which the letterhead said it was, and I am now demanding an investigation to find out who and where that sent that, you know, that derogatory, slanderous libel attack. Okay. I forget all the nuances that lawyers love to dream up. You know, like, what is it? Like, libel is when you do it in writing, you attack somebody in writing, and slander is when you do it, you know, verbally in public. I think that's,
yes.
I think that's what, you know, all this stuff is. So
that's
anyway.
Right.
Now, I've been in contact now with the legal department at Fox News in New York City, and surprised, yes, they do not want to know why somebody is running around putting their letterhead on these derogatory attacks and attacking yours truly. Okay, why would anybody want to attack a nice guy like me? I don't know. Okay, but anyway, yes, they are going to find out. So that just happened yesterday, but. As of yesterday afternoon, I had something put before me. Did does anybody know this? That on the morning of the 9/11 attacks, that George H.W. Bush had breakfast with a brother of Osama bin Laden? Does anybody know that?
Yes, he did.
I didn't know that.
I did.
Oh, okay. There's those coincidences again.
Uh-huh.
Right? That George H.W. Bush had breakfast with the brother of Osama bin Laden.
I think it was Salami bin Laden, if I'm not mistaken.
What, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I just had it given to me, and I'm impressed. Okay. Like I said, there are no coincidences in the intelligence business. And then, of course, Osama bin Laden masterminded the 9/11 attack. Okay. Okay, all right. And then I find out that, what is it, Parkin Oil, Parkin Energy, and Armbusta, okay, Armbusta, both, you know, those money pits that the Bushes seem to just kind of generate when they want to hit people up for more money. Armbusta, Parkin, Carlisle, what's the other one? Bocce Bank, okay. We're seeing a pattern here developing. See, no coincidence, remember. Well, guess who the big investor in Harkin Energy was? It's the Bin Laden family.
Oh, hey,
they're
Craig.
They're one of the biggest investors.
Craig?
Okay, yes.
I gotta correct myself. It wasn't Salami Bin Laden. It was Shafi Bin Laden. That's who it was.
Oh, well, thank you, Steve. Okay, but I am correct, right, that he did have breakfast with George H.W. Bush on the morning of the attack?
Yes, he did.
Okay, all right, okay. Oh, you know,
At the Ritz-Carlton okay. Hotel in Washington.
Okay.
At the Ritz-Carlton, yep.
And the way I understand this, too, is within the next 24 hours, there was only one plane allowed to leave the United States, and it was all safeguards were overridden to let this plane leave, to take off, wind up, load people on board, with the FBI closing in to interview these people. They were all members of the Bin Laden family, okay? They were all members of the Bin Laden family, and they flew unmolested out of U.S. airspace.
That's right.
Now, what kind of juice could that, you know, is that the kind of juice to get that, you know, get that to happen? Is that the same kind of, you know, what's the word, power, control?
Well, you know, Greg.
To get an overwhelming eavesdropping and wiretapping of everybody in America?
Greg.
Is that the same kind of control?
That's the kind of juice that can mysteriously have 84 out of the 85 cameras that were focused on the Pentagon that day malfunction. All but one camera malfunctioned. And that's the same kind of juice that can take control away from the colonels and the generals at the Pentagon who had authority 2 months before September 11th to use the invisible rockets that nobody's supposed to know about that protect the Pentagon. That kind of juice was taken away from the colonels and the and the generals, Evan, and was given to Dick Cheney expressly. That's what kind of juice that is.
What does Dick Cheney have besides being a draft dodger that would recommend him, okay, to have this kind of power? I'm mystified by it, okay? You know, either he has something on the Bush family, or, you know, or, no, that's it. That's all it could be, okay? There is no or, okay? That's what he had. He had something on the Bush family.
Bohemian Grove, Greg.
Yes. And like something like maybe weapons of mass destruction production, where he took those weapons of mass destruction that were produced on order by George H.W. Bush and reconfigured in Fort Rucker, Alabama, and stored in Pine Bluffs, Arkansas, and moved and then shipped down the Houston waterway after they had been loaded up on the Wabash, okay, and shipped to Spain, and then from Spain to Turkey into Iraq. Okay, maybe something like that, where he shook the hand of Saddam Hussein. Yeah, it's a dangerous thing. I'll tell you what, if you're one of our allies, to shake the hand of Dick Cheney or Donald Rumsfeld. Okay, they both signed the deal. They shook the hand of Saddam Hussein and received weapons of mass destruction. Okay, could it have been something like that, Steve? I'd like to know. Okay,
could have been.
I found the weapons of mass destruction. I turned him over to my command. Not a word was said. Not one word ever hit CNN. Okay. Not one word was ever announced that we had found those weapons, those 29 warheads. And by the way, all the GSNs, that the GS general supply numbers, okay, those are part of my law case, my legal case. All right. That's the only time I've seen those mentioned. That time, period. Okay. And those same weapons were registered on the Central Command's weapons logs. Okay, so they did exist. All right. So anyway, and another thing that has mystified me. Okay, maybe, and you always seem to be able to look this stuff up. While we're on the show, is okay. Now, one of the most infamous men on earth, Osama bin Laden. You know, just anthropomorphically, much different than most Arabs, okay, was traveling with an entourage of close to 2,000 people. 2,000 people, not 20, not 2, but 2,000 people, okay. He was moving between Kunduz and Hunden in Afghanistan, you know, almost exclusively. There's only about 30 miles between the two. Everybody in Afghanistan knew exactly who he was and where he was at any given time. And he and bin Laden was virtually unmolested the entire time during the Bush 8-year presidency. Okay. Now, there's another coincidence. I'd love to have somebody call that in. Okay. Call in with that statement. Tell me why I had a gem hunter, okay, an American gem hunter, tell me that bin Laden, okay, was in this area, operating within this area, and everybody knew exactly where he was.
Yeah.
With his entourage, okay. Please.
Well.
You know, tell me that, okay?
Yeah.
And why in 8 years of George Bush's tenure,
right? Yeah.
It's going to go down as the darkest tenure of a presidency in U.S. history.
Sure.
I mean, President Johnson, he makes Nixon look like a Boy Scout. A Boy Scout.
Okay. He makes old Tricky Dicky look pretty lame, huh?
Oh, well, the thing about Nixon, President Nixon, okay, was that sure he might have been, you know, a real operator, we'll call that an operator for lack of a better term, an operator, but he was a pro-America operator.
Right? Yes, he was.
He did everything with America's best interest at heart.
Yeah, well,
okay, there's no question.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Onassis and the Arabs would have been doing what they did to us years before. I don't know if anybody noticed this, but the oil embargo all of a sudden came about when Nixon got into trouble with Watergate.
Yeah.
Did anybody notice that?
Yeah.
Okay.
He did. He
all
did.
Right. Well, it was Nixon who was keeping them at bay from sticking up the American people and extorting massive oil prices and oil increases, you know, from us, which they were dying to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, say, Greg.
Yes.
Well, we're at the hour here. I thought we'd go ahead and wrap this up here.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, I was going to say it was Nixon who backed down Onassis, whose super tankers were moving oil into the U.S., and who was threatening to pull an embargo, okay, with the Arabs on us. So, but at least Nixon was working for the American people. Now, in 8 years, American intelligence with a massive intelligence system that can eavesdrop on virtually everybody on the entire planet and uses an electronic device could not find bin Laden. And then as soon as Barry Sotelo, Barack Obama, okay, gets into office and they find Osama bin Laden living in a nice, comfortable, cozy house, okay, in Pakistan, Abbottabad, Pakistan, okay, almost immediately. You know, I'm sorry, there are no coincidences in the intelligence business. Have somebody call in and explain that to me. I'd really like to know, okay? I think I have a right to know, you know? I mean, you know, let's face it. I was strapped to a stretcher and tortured, okay, by some of these very same people, you know, to find out who I'd reported all the torture at Abu Ghraib prison over. Okay, I think I have a right to know this. So if anybody knows out there, please call in. I'd love to hear it. So anyway, I'm sorry, Steve. Yes. Okay. Did you want to pull the plug?
Yeah. Yes, I do. I'm, I've got to get some changes in my, something, Greg. I am just tired a lot. I mean, I, get plenty of sleep. I've been on these hours for, I don't know, about 4 years now, but, I don't know. It's just every once in a while I seem to get tired.
Well, you're in good company. Remember Larry King kept the same hours.
Yeah.
See, look what it did for Larry King.
He did. Okay. I used to listen to him, Greg, when I was out there on the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, likewise. I used to work the third watch shift at Folsom Prison, okay, in California. I worked at Folsom Prison, and I drive home. You know, I had a long drive, about an hour home every night, and I would listen to Larry King the same way, okay. And he always had some pretty great guests on, I have to admit.
He did.
Okay. Everybody from Barbara Bush, okay, to Abby Hoffman.
Right.
To Keith Richards. Did you ever hear Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones get on his show?
No, I didn't. But I'm sure he was, though, yeah.
Okay, well, that's a shame because, you know, try as I might, you know, I'm actually a trained listener, okay? I'm trained to, you know, I actually have attended courses on how to listen to people, all right? And because that's part of intelligence work, it's actually talking to people.
Right.
And not eavesdropping on all their phone calls, okay? And I tried as hard as I could to understand Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones.
Oh, yeah, right.
I couldn't figure out what he was saying about anything, okay? All right.
Sure, it's that thick accent of his, but, I do thank you for coming on again, Greg. Sorry about last night, though.
Okay. Well, you know, what I'd really like to hear sometimes, I mean, maybe the next show, is people call in and explain some of that stuff that I brought up, okay?
Yeah.
You know, why these things are the way they are. You know, that's all I want people to do is think, okay? Think, why are we going to have these cash control programs implemented on July 1st?
Yeah.
And what's it going to do to their lives,
right,
their homes, and so forth? So, right. You know, and by the way, I'd love to hear from the 10 million people that have now had their homes foreclosed on, okay, since this all started.
Right.
So I'd love to hear them call in, okay, and explain all this stuff. So anyway, okay, well, hey, by all means, you know, I'll let you go and get a decent night's sleep, and And I'd like to say goodnight to all your listeners that have always been so patient to listen to me. So anyway, thank you so much, Steve, and goodnight to all your listeners.
All right. I appreciate you coming on again, Greg. And have a good night over there.
It was my pleasure. Have a good night in Michigan, and we'll turn out the lights in California here, okay?
All right. Good night. All right, everyone. I'm out for the night here. I'm Stephen Roberts. This has been a very special Tuesday night, Cancel a Cabal. Good night, everyone.